This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, March 11, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio just north of New York City. And Taylor, I noticed in your morning rundown that you sent me today, you didn't have the email we got from our boss regarding the royal controversy and whether or not Tim Kirchen, who won the bet that we had about whether or not he had an awareness of that.
That is a that is some kind of omission on my part. Do you care to share what she said?
Yeah, our boss Luis Caranetta, because you said the other day in the podcast, you can say it again. Go ahead, you can explain. What did you say on the podcast the other day?
Okay, so she said that I believe that she said she thought I won the bet and that you were the loser, Buster.
Huh? And then yesterday we get an email and she writes, catching up on some Baseball Tonight podcast today. I want to clarify that I didn't say Taylor won, but did say I'm not sure Buster did. If the bet was Tim would know Harry and Meghan did a sit down with Oprah, then Buster won. If it was anything more than that, I give it to Taylor. Let's see what people say. Of course, we decided Tim would in the end decide this bet. But I kind of feel like you were citing her as like backing your story and she's not backing it.
You know what? I need to go to my text messages now when we hit Bleacher Tweets to see what she said to me because she might have changed course too.
I noticed there wasn't nearly as many people weighing in on your side after we played the evidence yesterday.
All right, Buster.
All right. So yesterday we got official word from the Houston Astros that Forrest Whitley is going to have Tommy John surgery. Astros manager Dusty Baker talked about that.
You know, we don't have all – I mean, we heard the same thing that you heard, but we don't have any particulars on the situation yet. We do know that he's going to have it. And so I don't know quite, you know, who's going to do it or any of these things. But, when we get one, we'll give you guys an update. I haven't had a chance to talk to him either. So I want to talk to him, before. I was hoping I'd get the chance to talk to him before he left.
Giancarlo Stanton, of course, has been hurt so often in recent years. Gleyber Torres really struggled, was out of shape in the 60-game season last year. Well, they look great this spring, and they did on Wednesday night.
Judge off third, Gardner off first. As Stanton absolutely destroys that. High, deep, gone, and into the Tampa night for Giancarlo Stanton.
Max Scherzer struck out 5 over the course of 3 scoreless innings on Wednesday, and he talked about it afterward.
I was able to get a little bit more intensity out of today and, was just able to pound the strike zone. Was trying and not walk people and just give, try and give them a pitch a hit and see what happens. It's spring, try to get some reads on some swings. So I always come into a game wanting to throw strikes. I never come into a game wanting to throw balls. So it's just a product of going out there and pitching.
Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager, was asked yesterday if Max Scherzer is going to pitch on opening day against the Mets' Jacob DeGrom. He said that he didn't have any information on that, but he did mention, I'm sure he said it with a smile, that Max Scherzer looked really good yesterday. Yeah, opening day, our first broadcast with their Sunday night group, Nationals, Mets, and at some point they'll announce Max Scherzer's starting against Jacob DeGrom. I am so fired up about that. Mets didn't get good news about Carlos Carrasco. He has stopped throwing because of some soreness in his elbow. Luis Rojas, their manager, says that it's nothing too concerning. It's certainly something worth monitoring as we move forward. They drew a lot of attention yesterday for a drill that they did that finished with the Mets practicing a World Series winning celebration.
Everybody celebrate! I want to have a race! Here we go! Don't be nervous!
Yeah, so all the players are jumping around. That sound from the New York Daily News, pretty amazing. Taylor, what'd you think? We'll talk a little bit about it coming up with Jeff Passan and Sarah Langs. What'd you think?
It's fun. I think it's appropriate. You got to know how you're going to celebrate if you win a World Series, even if you just do it one time. Like, you got to get it straightened out. It's no big deal. It's just spring training. Everyone needs to lighten up about it. I thought the video was a lot of fun.
Yep, I agree with you. The Texas Rangers acknowledged to reporters yesterday may allow 100% fan capacity for their home opener. And then in subsequent games, the stadium will be open at a slightly reduced capacity. So they could have 40,518 fans piled into that ballpark for their first game. This drew a lot of attention around baseball yesterday. We'll be talking with Jeff about that and about whether or not someone needs to say something. Before we get to Jeff, Sarah, and Steve, two things I want to mention. First, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcast and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+. And check out the latest 30 for 30 podcast, March 11, 2020. It's the story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans, as told by those who lived the events of the day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci, friend of the show. March 11, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11, 2020. Follow 30 for 30 podcast. Listen now wherever you get your podcast.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Whoa. Well, Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. I was kind of thinking there was going to be some production, Taylor.
You know, it's out of my hands. I will take credit when things are going well, but obviously when things are going poorly, I will blame it on our imaging guy, who is a legend, but is also a very busy man. So we will get that hopefully next time Jeff appears on the podcast.
Jeff, we don't have your walk-up music yet. I apologize.
I got to be honest, the crack of the bat's actually kind of cool. So I will take that. And anytime I hear a good bat crack, like, isn't that part of the fun of watching Giancarlo Stanton? And did you see the Josh Mears home run for the Padres? Like, just the sound of a 115 mile per hour swing is pretty fantastic.
And I love watching the outfielders on those, you know, to see the first jab step in there. Oh, never mind.
I'm just going to watch this and admire it and see what some giant being can do that I'm incapable of doing.
Exactly. Yesterday, we got word from the Texas Rangers about fans in the stands. And it's very interesting because we've heard about maybe 12% in some place, maybe 15%, maybe 20% with the Rangers. 100%. And I heard a lot of reaction around the sport. What about you?
I heard a lot of reaction too. And it was not necessarily the positive variety. There are some people inside of baseball who believe that opening back up and opening up as fully as they can, as quickly as they can, is not a bad thing, that we're at the point in the pandemic where we're able to do that. The part of this, though, that to me stood out the most was that they're going to do this for two exhibition games and opening day, but afterward, they're not going to. Why? What's the point of doing it for one day if you're not going to do it for the rest? And the explanation that I got from one person outside of the organization that made a lot of sense is the Rangers aren't going to sell out any games except opening day. And that may be the rationale behind it. But for the Texas Rangers to be the bellwether for the entire country of what opens fastest first, it just didn't seem like the right place for it to happen or the right time for it to happen. I know we're all feeling good about the trajectory of the pandemic right now, as we should. The vaccine rollout has in a lot of ways been very successful, and the more people who are inoculated, the better off we are. But the notion of 40,000 plus people, even in an open air situation, sitting right next to one another with the mask mandate being dropped in Texas, I don't know, maybe I don't have enough faith in people in their willingness to look out for others to think that this is a good idea.
Not at all. And when I saw the thing that you referred to, which is they're going to go to more social distancing in games 2, 3 and, you know, games after that, I'm like, wait, is it safe or is it not safe?
Right.
That needs to be the primary question that determines what they do. And this absolutely, for me, is a reminder that when it comes to Major League Baseball, we have to think of it as 30 separate businesses. Because I suspect that if baseball was run absolutely from top down, central authority, that someone would step in and say, no, we are not going to have a situation where possibly we're going to be reading about a super spreader event 2 weeks after the fact with one of our Major League teams. But the power that I think a lot of casual fans believe that Rob Manfred has is like the overall, the god of baseball. He doesn't have that. He's employee of these 30 teams. And so when something like this happens, he probably just sits back and winces.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think Rob Manfred is in a position where if he were to come out publicly against this and say, this is not a good idea, this is not what Major League Baseball stands for right now, that the Rangers would almost have to back off and cow to that, because he is still the commissioner. And whatever powers that he has in actuality, there are implicit powers as well, where he is capable of changing public opinion based on just him being the commissioner and putting pressure on the organization. My initial instinct came from texts that I was getting from players who were saying, so we're not allowed to leave the hotel. We're not allowed to go out in public, but 40,000 people whose whereabouts we have no idea, whose willingness to adhere to protocols we have no sense of, are going to be allowed into our workplace. And you're going to put up maybe possibly some plexiglass barriers and that's going to protect us. Really? And it's the difference between treating those whom you are paying versus those who are paying you. It seems like the customers in this case are getting a broad ability to do whatever they want, whereas the employees are being held to a far different standard.
So what do you think happens moving forward? Do you think that everyone just kind of moves on and it happens and they wind up with at capacity for that first game?
I hate to try and like look into the crystal ball here, because so many predictions when it comes to COVID have gone awry, and this is still a few weeks down the road. So we don't know where exactly the case numbers are going to be, the hospitalizations and deaths are going to be in Texas. Listen, Buster, I hope that everything goes swimmingly here. I hope that ballparks open and that because the games, the vast, vast majority of games are being played outside, and the transmission of COVID-19 outside, according to studies and scientists, is severely depressed compared to those indoors, especially in places with poor ventilation, that all of this is much ado about nothing, that there is no super spreader event, and that baseball moves on and we do get closer to more fans in the stands and other places. But I think you look around the rest of the sport, I think the highest percentage that other ballparks are operating at this point is like 30%. So when you have 10, 12 and a half, 15, 20, 25, 30, 100. You know, one of these things is not like the other.
Well, and we do hope that there is more conversation about it, because baseball does not need that sort of publicity. If it did turned out that that opening day was a super spreader. We talked at the outset of the show about the Mets celebrating game 7 of the World Series success in a practice game. In a backfield. It got a lot of attention on social media yesterday. What'd you think?
I hate to be like the old man and the total hardo. Save the celebration for when you win something.
Wow. I wouldn't think you would say that.
I feel like I've aged 10 years during this podcast just by saying that. It's fine. Whatever. They can do what they want to do. I'm not sitting here with like a huge opinion. I'm just saying, if I'm Luis Rojas, and we get to the end of a sim game where you get 27 straight outs without committing an error, you know, we play that with my 13-year-old. They try and get 27 straight, like, correct plays. And at the end of that, they're excited, but they're not dogpiling. Like, you know what? I'm just going to stop right now, because I feel so old saying this. But act like you've been there, maybe?
No. See, here's when I saw it, I'm like, and you know this, having, you know, covered a team throughout spring training, these are the dog days of spring training.
They are. Right?
The position players come in, they have a couple rounds of live batting practice, they get some at-bats in the first week of March, and then they're like, okay, we're ready to go. But you know what? Everyone's got to wait for the starting pitchers to build up their innings and for the affiliates to make their money in the last exhibition games. And so these, to me, when I saw this, I'm like, these are coaches just trying to keep the players engaged and have fun on a backfield. So I didn't think it was that big of a deal. So I actually feel younger than you right now.
If they, you know, if they had like busted out some champagne, I probably would have been for it. Like, if you're going to do it the right way.
Like soda cans or some sparkling water, just spraying it over each other. You know, thank goodness, though, that they didn't actually dogpile and someone got hurt, because then there would have been a real conversation, especially here in New York. You're working on a Juan Soto piece. You're early in the process, which must be a lot of fun.
I just love watching Juan Soto so much. And Juan Soto, one of those guys who is so special so early in his career that it allows you to step back and say, I'm watching history. You know, there are some guys who you just know are going to be great, and you hope that they don't have injuries. You hope that there are no off-field incidents. You hope that nothing gets in the way of that excellence. Watching Juan Soto swing, and that's what a lot of the story is going to be about, just understanding why he is so good and how he's so good. I almost go back to his first at bat in the big leagues. So Juan Soto, if you remember this, is 19 years old. And the only reason he's up is because there was a rash of injuries that the Nationals had, and they just didn't have great minor league outfield depth at that point. So they're like, you know what? Juan Soto's played a dozen games above A ball. Let's bring him up anyway. He's been dominating. He's been fantastic there. And that first pitch he sees, he doesn't just take out, but he takes out Oppo. And the beauty of Juan Soto's swing is his power to all fields. He just hits the ball hard in every direction. It's not one of those, you know, majestic left-handed pull swings where he's going to be hitting a ball high into the air like he did off Clayton Kershaw in the division series game. No, he can take you out absolutely anywhere. And trying to figure out what makes that swing so great is the fulcrum of this story. And the way that we're going to be telling it with cover story is going to be pretty fun.
When I watch him hit, it reminds me, I'm stating the obvious in terms of where the numbers are and his plate discipline. But of course, it reminds you of Barry Bonds. But the thing that I find to be so interesting is he reminds me of Bonds and how you can see the chess match on the hitter's face. You know, yes. Barry Bonds, when he would take a pitch, he would look at the pitcher like, I knew you were going to throw that, even if he didn't swing. And he would give that look. Juan Soto clearly is doing that all the way through, which is why, you know this, he kind of rubs some opponents the wrong way a little bit. I really hope that they understand that it really isn't personal. This is a great player who's processing information, and he's competing with this tremendous competitive arrogance.
Yes. Competitive. I might steal that from the story. Competitive arrogance is a really good way to put it. And the fact that he will not just do the shuffle, but that he will stare down the pitcher. I love that so much about him. Juan Soto is essentially saying to the pitcher, bring me your best. And if you beat me, that's fine, but you ain't beat me. And it, you know, the at bat, I've gone through a lot of Juan Soto at bats, just looking for the perfect one to illustrate who he is and what he is. And so far, I've settled on the double that he hit off the wall in the World Series against Gerrit Cole. And remember, Gerrit Cole punched him out in that first at bat on, I think it was a 99 mile an hour fastball. And you see the way that he approached Soto the next time around, though. It was a lot of off speed stuff. Yep. And Gerrit Cole has a bunch of 60 and 70 and 80 grade pitches. His fastball for most hitters is the toughest pitch to hit, but he was not giving Soto a fastball because he knows if you give Juan Soto too many fastballs, one of them's going to end up in the seats.
It's funny you mentioned that. I remember during that series that Soto batted against Verlander. I can't even remember the result, but I remember after watching whatever the result was, I glanced at Verlander and you could see on his face like, oh, I got lucky. Like he is, Justin does this thing where it kind of looks off like this, like, oh boy, boy, I got away with one right there. And I think that a lot of the Astros pitchers began to feel that way by the end of the World Series, which is nuts when you think about a player that young and there's that much experience on that Astros staff, and he was dominating them and how great he was. That was
one of the things I love so much about Soto is typically that kind of attitude is earned not necessarily with excellence, but with time, right? Like Justin Verlander can stare you down and strut around like he's the cock of the walk because he's had a Hall of Fame career. You know, he wasn't doing that when he came up at 23 and 24 and 25. Juan Soto's been doing like from jump, and the confidence that he has in his abilities and in himself and in his eye and in his swing. I mean, he is just, he's the best hitter in baseball right now. And I say that acknowledging that there are a lot of really, really good hitters, including one in Mike Trout, who, when all said and done, might be the best player that we've ever seen.
It's going to be fun to watch him throughout his career. I'm with you. You just cross your fingers. You hope he stays healthy and then he can get a full career in because the numbers are going to be absolutely insane. All right. So we got word in the last 48 hours about two injury situations in New York. You've got Zach Britton. It was a bone chip. It's going to have to be removed. Probably means he's not going to be back to the Yankees bullpen until midseason. Carlos Carrasco has a sore elbow. The Mets are downplaying this, saying this isn't that big of a deal. I feel like that the Zach Britton thing, that's not a huge deal for the Yankees because of the bullpen depth and also because of the context of the division. You know, the Yankees, clearly the Blue Jays are better. The Rays were excellent last year, but, you know, maybe they've taken a little bit of a step back. There's not as much pressure on the Yankees. In the National League East, if Carlos Carrasco's down, to me, this is potentially a huge deal. What do you think?
I agree that the Carrasco thing is big for the Mets, but there is some starting pitching depth there that they can backfill it with. I think the issue for the Mets is that they're in an extraordinarily competitive division.
Right.
You know, the question has always been, is it Mets or Braves in the East? I've been on the Braves side, and I think once Mike Soroka is back and you have that rotation with him and Anderson and Fried and Charlie Morton and Drew Smyly, like, whoa, that's a really, really good starting rotation right there. And there, of course, are some health concerns. You know, how good is Soroka going to be coming off the Achilles? And can Drew Smyly actually stay healthy for an entire season? But when it's all said and done, I think it's probably the talented team there. So when you lose somebody like Carrasco, who you were expecting to, fill that rotation until Noah Syndergaard comes back and be part of this group with Jacob deGrom and Marcus Stroman. That is, if not the best part of the Mets, then certainly among the best parts. It hurts. And it puts that much more pressure on a guy like David Peterson. I'm more concerned about the Zach Britton injury to the Yankees than you.
Okay.
I think that what Zach Britton did in that seventh inning fireman slash eighth inning role, where when he comes in, you have all the confidence in him that you would a closer, really shorten the game for them. Do you look at Chad Green the same way? I mean, Chad Green for the second half of last season was pretty awesome, but Chad Green has had some fits and starts. Darren O'Day has been awesome for pretty much his entire career, but there is that lingering feeling in the back of your head that a guy who's thrown in the mid 80s is still a guy who's thrown in the mid 80s and is vulnerable at any point in time. Beyond that, Justin Wilson, is Loai Siga going to be a guy who steps up? You know, Albert Abreu is someone who, just because he throws so damn hard, I'm going to keep an eye on and think he could be a separating piece or somebody who can step up into that late inning type of role. I just named a lot of guys, so maybe I'm contradicting my point here, but it's just with Zach Britton, he's been so good for so long that when you look at relievers in the volatility year over year, when you have a guy who has performed as consistently and as well as he has, and when you have a guy like Aroldis Chapman, who at the back end, you know, he's getting up there. He's going to be, I think he's 33 years old now. Doesn't throw quite as hard as he used to. It's just losing a guy of that quality this late and not getting him back maybe until midseason. I think it's something that hurts the Yankees.
I saw Chapman pitch last night in the exhibition. He is developing a splitter. I'm curious to see if that's going to help him age better. That is a
he has thrown that thing in the past. Oh, yeah. When he has, it is nasty. He just hasn't known where it's going. That's always been the problem with this splitter. And that's the problem with splitters, period. Like that may be the hardest pitch to not just command, but just control. You ever watch a splitter in slow motion, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I don't think people recognize like what we know now about spin rates and stuff like that. I don't think people recognize a splitter is the closest thing you're going to get to a knuckleball. Especially when you have someone like Aroldis Chapman, who's got those enormous hands, and it's almost like an old school forkball that he can throw it. And the way that thing tumbles and moves, it's a beautiful thing to behold.
It was crazy. And you could tell last night, and David Cohen was talking about this on the Yes Network, that, you know, that slider, of course, that Chapman throws as a left-hander is more vulnerable to right-handed hitters.
Yep.
The splitter makes him more dangerous against right-handed hitters because of the way that it breaks away. Real quick, we got about a minute left. Tell me about what you think the Francisco Lindor extension could wind up looking like, assuming that they get it across the finish line.
Big question to me is, does it start with a three or not? And I think Francisco Lindor wants it to start with a three. I think he has all kinds of leverage. That to me is the part of this that is really working in his favor. Carlos Carrasco down with an elbow injury. Mets gave up Jimenez, and Mets gave up
Rosario. Yep.
Thank you. It's not like the Mets took on a dump like the Cardinals did with Nolan Arenado. Like, they paid for 1 year and a negotiating window. And this negotiating window, day after day, is getting smaller and smaller. And I suppose, the argument for the Mets can be that we have Syndergaard for a year. We have Stroman for a year. We have DeGrom, still in the middle of his prime. We're trying to win right now. And so if we have to pay a little extra in a trade and we don't wind up keeping him, we can go out and sign another shortstop in free agency. But man, it's when you make that trade, you do it to sign the guy. And I think Francisco Lindor has done everything possible this spring to endear himself to Mets fans and to New York and to illustrate why he should be their shortstop of the future. Now they just need to pay him like it.
I agree with you. And I also think this is the first situation where Steve Cohen, the Mets new owner, is going to be feeling the heat of Mets fans. Yeah. Like for Mets fans, this is going to be a barometer for, are we going to be different? And you and I would agree. I mean, the payroll has gone up almost $40 million that, yeah, it's very different. But if they don't get this deal done, that there will be some rumblings about the owner, which is why I agree with you. I think that Francisco has all kinds of leverage. All right, sir. It's good to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
Pleasure's always mine. Have a good one.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, the Mets drew a lot of attention yesterday for their drill that they did where they practiced winning Game 7 of the World Series. It was very interesting to see the reaction to it because I just kind of look at it as the coaching staff trying to find a fun way for the players to get through one more day of drills, where social media wasn't quite so kind on how they perceived it to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is just another example of how social media can find something wrong with pretty much everything. I saw that video and it was just so much fun. You know, I loved watching that. I agree. It's like, all right, we're kind of in, you said to me just before we came on, these dog days of spring training. And, you know, you just need to find a way to make these days different. And why not? I think that the Mets have, you know, why not talk about some excitement and, you know, enact something. I think it's, you know, positive energy. I loved it.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 22. So there have been eight players to lead their league in homers before turning 23. So at 22 years old or younger in the modern era, which is since 1900. Elias helped me out with that note. And I've just been kind of fixated on this because Fernando Tatis Jr. is 22. Juan Soto is 22, Vlad Jr. is 22, and at least the first two are projected within the top 5 to 10 home runs for 2020 if you look at Steamer. And Vlad Jr. is not in that projection, but we all know what his power can be. So I've just been thinking about this of, you know, what are we going to do if Tatis leads the league in homers or leads the majors or if Soto does the same. So the youngest guy to lead his league in home runs was Tony Conigliaro in 1965. He was 20 years old. The youngest to lead the majors in home runs was Sam Crawford in 1901. And I love when it's someone in 1901 because, you know, he led the majors with 16 home runs, which is always just a ton of fun. Eddie Matthews is third on the list in 1953. He was 21. And if Tatis or Vlad were to lead their league in home runs, they'd be fourth on that list. Either of them, I guess if they both did, it would be fourth and then fifth. And Soto would be seventh if he did it. So just something to keep an eye on. I mean, I just love all this young talent that we have in the game right now. So it's fun to put them on some lists potentially.
Number two.
Number two is 115. So, you know, we were just talking about spring training before, and there's back and forth. How much does spring training matter? How much does stats in spring training matter? Not very much. But when Giancarlo Stanton is doing what we know Giancarlo Stanton does in spring training, it's worth talking about. So last night, he hit a home run, 115.1 miles an hour off the bat. That's healthy, good Giancarlo Stanton. That's the Giancarlo Stanton that the Yankees traded for. So he has the most 115 mile an hour batted balls tracked by StatCast. That's since 2015 by a ton. So he has 104 of those just in the regular season. We're not counting the spring training one. We're just using it as a jumping off point. Aaron Judge is second on that list with 44. 104 in first, 44 in second. And Stanton has managed to lead the league in exit velocity. So have the individual single highest exit velocity on a batted ball in every single season tracked by StatCast. Again, that's 2015. And we know that he has an injury history. So that means that he did it in 2015 when he only played in 74 games. In 2019, he only played in 18 games, but he still managed to have the hardest hit batted ball of the season. And in 2020, he played in 23 and he still did that. So there has not been a season where Giancarlo Stanton did not have the hardest hit batted ball of the year.
Number one.
Number one is five. So again, spring training stats, I know, but I've had my eye on Joey Gallo this spring, and I just think it's worth pointing out what he's doing and what it could mean for him in the regular season. So he has five home runs. He's leading spring training. Leading spring training in home runs does not necessarily mean anything, but for him, I think it shows that his swing is really back to a good place. So he had five spring training home runs in 2018. He went on to hit 40 home runs that year. So it's a little bit of history for you, but he was talking early in camp in late February about how he actually went to Marucci, who makes his bats, and ended up getting a new bat over the offseason and having a more level swing, basically it not being quite as top heavy. And I think that's really interesting because 2017 to 19, he had a pretty consistent launch angle. In 2020, it went up pretty drastically. He was hitting a lot fewer balls in the sweet spot. And I think that that may have been an indication of a less level swing for him. So I like this idea that he's kind of flattened it out. And I think that that's really going to help him in 2021. And I mean, we all want to see Joey Gallo hitting those 115 mile an hour type home runs.
So two follow-ups for you. First, Giancarlo Stanton, do you believe that he's going to have a big year? Are you sort of up in the air?
It's just so hard. I want him to. I absolutely want him to, because there's nothing more fun than him hitting 120 mile an hour home runs for the Yankees. I have no indication that he won't, other than what's happened over the last few years. So I'm going to remain optimistic. I think that currently he looks like he will. He looks really good in spring training. He looks healthy. That seems to be the big thing for him. So right now it feels like he's going to have a big year. I don't know if he's going to hit, you know, 59 home runs again, but if he hits 35 to 40 like that one last night, the Yankees are going to be in great shape.
His body looks completely different, you know, in this year that he's had a full year now working with Eric Cressy. He looks less like a weightlifter and he looks more like a really healthy baseball player.
Yes.
So I think he could wind up being, you know, this might be a year where he can actually avoid injuries. And among the young players that you mentioned possibly leading the majors in home runs, which guy would you pick who would do it? Because I have a guy, I can tell you, I think there's almost no chance he will do it.
I mean, I actually had to do a draft for this on MLB.com a couple weeks ago, and I picked Tatis, but it's because Soto was taken. I think Soto is the one who would do this year. They're actually projected for the same number of home runs, depending on which system you're looking at. I don't think Vlad Jr. is going to do it. I include him because he is in their age group, and you know we know what the raw power is, but Soto seems like the guy who's most likely to do this to me.
I think Soto is the least likely guy because he's so good. This is the year, I think, when opposing managers just throw up their hands and give them the Barry Bonds treatment and say, you know what, we can't pitch to this guy. He has such
a
command strike zone. And I think it's going to be the way Bonds was in 2004, 5, and 6, where he would go into a game and he might get one or two pitches to actually square up and hit. He's good enough to take advantage of it, but I do wonder if this is going to be a year where he's going to get pitched around a ton.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, Mike Trout has never led his league in home runs, and that's basically why. He's hit 40-plus, but he's never managed to do it because he just didn't get quite enough pitches. And to your point about not getting pitched to enough, I mean, he's third in the league in walk rate since he debuted, Juan Soto, behind only Trout and Bryce Harper. So he's already teetering on that edge of that absolute Bonds territory. So I do agree that that could be working against him. I'm going to keep the faith that he'll get some good pitches to hit, but I think you're right there.
All right, Sarah. Thanks for doing this. Have fun.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Wow. Birds. Spring training. That's pretty cool. And we're talking with Steve Berthiaume, play-by-play man of television for the Arizona Diamondbacks, who's helping us out with our National League West previews. Bert, it's always great to see you. How many years did we work together on Baseball Tonight? Like seven?
Yeah, we did. I was at ESPN for 13 years and most of that at Baseball Tonight on the back end. And I never forget driving back from the 2012 World Series with you when we were stuck in Detroit because snow had wiped out the East Coast. And I remember you calling me in my hotel room as I was wondering, how am I going to get out of here and get home? And you said, I'm getting a car. I'm busting out. Are you with me? And I'm like, yes, I'm in. And then we drove, I think, straight all the way to your house the next day.
Okay, your memory's pretty good. It was actually a hurricane. Remember, I think it was, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it a hurricane?
Yeah.
And not snow?
Yeah. Yep, good call.
I think it was Irene, if I remember. Is that right? Or no, I think Irene was in 2011 anyway, but it was crazy driving back because you and I didn't know what we were going to encounter, but we found our way and we sort of illegally handled the rental car, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I remember. I remember having to drop it off at the airport at Bradley in Hartford. But I remember it's like we were told, I don't think you can cross the state of Ohio or Pennsylvania legally, but we kind of pulled a Smokey and a Bandit and made a break for it.
Exactly. I learned a lot on that trip, let me tell you, now that I'm thinking back on it. All right. So let's talk about the Diamondbacks. I feel like I was going to write a thing this weekend where I'm kind of rooting for baseball and the Players Association before the start of the regular season to figure out expanded playoffs, because I feel like that would be important for a team like the Diamondbacks. What are you seeing in them?
I see some optimism. They obviously have some challenges with the Dodgers and the Padres and everything they've done, Buster, but this is a core group that won 85 games back in 2019. And before the season last year, they felt like they just needed to supplement that a little bit and they would have a genuine playoff contender. And this time last year, a lot of folks were picking the Diamondbacks to be a postseason team. They had added Starling Marte. They'd signed Madison Bumgarner. They'd gotten some veteran pieces in the bullpen like Junior Guerra, Hector Rondon. And then the pandemic hit and it just kind of rolled over the Diamondbacks. They did not get off to a great start. At one point, they were 13-11, and then things just got away from them. They dropped 18 of 20 and finished up with a very difficult season. But the thing that people are optimistic about now is that this is, for the most part and in large part, the same group that won 85 games 2 years ago. And so there is a lot of reason for optimism here. They have a lot of pitching depth. They have strengthened the bullpen. And the offensive group is a bunch of very productive hitters. And if a couple of guys, namely Eduardo Escobar and Ketel Marte, hit like they did 2 years ago, and there's no reason to think that they won't, this is going to be a competitive team.
What have you seen in Bumgarner so far this spring? In the one game I watched him pitch, I was like, wow, he's learned how to create a differential between his fastball and his off-speed stuff, maybe better than he had in recent years. What did you see?
I saw the same thing. And in fact, we talked to Mad Bum yesterday. He threw a B game somewhere on Salt River on the backfields and said in that sort of closed set, he was trying some different things, a different mix of off-speed pitches. He's looked terrific so far. And I think Mad Bum, more than anyone, was most affected by the shutdown. His ramp up and his whole process were completely interrupted. And I think by the time it was start ready to throw baseballs again in July and August, he just wasn't physically or pitching wise where he usually is. And we saw those results on the field. Now, the other part of that was, I think toward the end of the year, they sort of figured out the game planning and the discussions and the preparation, what he needs and how they adjust to him. We have Mike Fitzgerald here, who's now the assistant GM, a tremendous analytics team. And Matt Hurges told me, the pitching coach, they kind of backed off on all the data a little bit. Let Mad Bum pitch a little bit more off the menu, as it were. And he felt that it made him less predictable. It sort of freed him up to improvise out there. And we saw the difference. His last two starts last year against Houston and Colorado were terrific. So that's the Mad Bum we expect to see this year. And he's looked terrific.
Now, for years, when we talk about the best player that no one really talks about, the answer always seemed to be Freddie Freeman. And now he's won an MVP award, so he can't be that guy. I really feel like for casual baseball fans, the best player nobody's heard of is Zach Gallen. What do you think?
Totally agree. He's a guy that Mike Hazen says has elite weapons. He does an unbelievable job of pitching around the edges of the strike zone. He's got kind of, I don't want to drop the Greg Maddux comp, but that, you know, he lives around the edges like Maddux always did. In fact, Maddux has been a role model of Zach's for a long time. That sort of short-ish right-hander, the Tim Hudson kind of guy. Zach Gallen's unbelievable. He's really, really good. And he just wants to get better every day. He's very cerebral. He's a smart guy. He's got a quiet fire inside. He's very competitive. And people here are very excited when he takes the ball every fifth day.
Give me an example of that competitive nature that you just referenced. If something you've seen, you know, in a game or your story you've heard, or, you know, some anecdote that a coach or manager related to you.
That he's constantly asking questions. He wants more info. We talked about how they learned to sort of back off Madison with the data and the game planning. Gallen wants more. He can't get enough. And they have an unbelievable analytics team here, tons of information. They throw a whole lot at their pitchers and catchers, and Gallen just eats it up.
What has to happen for the Diamondbacks in order to compete with the Dodgers and Padres in your eyes?
The bounce back guys have to bounce back. We're talking, I mentioned the 2019 team that won 85 games. Eduardo Escobar that year, 35 homers. He was fourth in the major leagues in RBIs. Ketel Marte 2 years ago, 32 homers, 92 RBIs. He was fourth in the MVP voting in the National League. If those guys bounce back and have their typical kinds of offensive seasons, the Diamondbacks will compete. If David Peralta stays healthy, and he hit a leadoff home run last night against Clayton Kershaw over at Camelback Ranch in Glendale, if he has a typical Peralta season, they'll be fine. Christian Walker has become a very steady offensive presence and a terrific defensive first baseman. And then you've got Cole Calhoun, who last year, 40 RBIs in 54 games, hit a bunch of home runs. He just had a knee operation, a minor procedure. They expect him back probably by the beginning of May. That's a pretty solid offensive group. And if they all contribute like they can, the D-backs will compete.
All right, Bert. Always great to see you. Always great to talk with you.
Did you like my bird noises? I sent that to Taylor. I was so excited. I'm like, oh, I get to send Buster some bird calls.
I didn't know. I actually, it's so funny. I didn't know it was for you. If I'd known it was for you, I would have sold it a lot better than I did right there. I was like, Taylor, what? Okay, so you're sending Bert. I'm talking to Bert.
That was poorly produced.
Sorry, guys.
I went out in my backyard. I'm like, oh, I got to send Buster some bird calls.
And I love that. Thank you.
We're in our weather sweet spot right now. It's gorgeous here. So we have a lot of great birds in the backyard. So it worked out nicely.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. And I am looking at my text messages from Luis Cornetta. And she compliments us and says Baseball Tonight is already a finely tuned machine. So we got that going for us from the boss. And she says, I'm not sure that I believe that Buster actually won the bet unless just Kirkshin knowing there was an interview counts. So
okay. You
were right. I don't know. Flimsy text. We'll move on. We'll talk to Timmy next week.
No, we're not. We're going to talk to Tim next week. No, I'm just kidding around on it. It's not that big of a deal. I do think it's pretty cool, though, that, you know, since I'm the old guy and I've been at ESPN longer than you, like the social media crowd is rooting for you to win this bet. There's no doubt about it.
I'm just a scrappy upstart podcast producer. You're the big superstar. So, you know, people like an underdog story. Let's go to the tweets and a tweet here that you actually responded to yesterday, but I thought we should bring it to further light here. Kyle Benning at Kyle_Benning writes in, stop all of this hate on the Holsteins. They are the superior dairy cow. Can you explain the difference between Holsteins jerseys and why you believe jerseys are superior?
Yeah. So here's the deal. Okay. Holsteins are definitely generate more volume. Okay. They are compilers. If we're going to use the baseball terms in terms of they generate milk. They're bigger, they're stronger, and I think they're dumber. That's my experience. Jerseys, on the other hand, which coincidentally or not, were the type of cows that I had growing up, they are smaller. I think they're absolutely smarter, and they give a better quality of milk with higher butterfat content. So jerseys clearly are superior. And just an aside, the reason why we had jerseys was because Holsteins were too big for our barn, which was built in 1932.
Okay, there you go. All right, we are Jersey Cow Podcast through and through.
Nice.
Let's go to Oren Sleepwalker at Oren83. He writes in, how long do you think it will take before the conversation starts about the Pirates trading Cabrian Hayes? It's not like they'll contend before he has 1 to 2 years of club control. In the best case, why not cash in sooner? That is very defeatist. What do you think, Buster?
Pirates fans, come back from the ledge. And they're not going to talk about trading him anytime soon, but boy, you wish we weren't constantly having this conversation about the Pirates. I want to see him stay in the Pirates uniform, and his value is not going to go down if he stays with the Pirates a couple more years.
Next up, we have Jared McInnes at Cupstradamus. He writes in, this stat has to close the book on the Molina Hall of Fame debate. 403 fewer stolen bases than the second best team. Steals prevented have to be equal to offensive steals. Yadi has taken roughly Ricky Henderson's career prowess off the base paths. And he tweeted a graphic, I guess, seen on a Cardinals broadcast. So between 2004 and 2020, the Cardinals had 847 stolen bases allowed. The next fewest was the Arizona Diamondbacks at 1,250. Yep. So that's a disparity.
The significant difference in mere attempts, which means, and I had managers tell me this, is that you go into St. Louis to play the Cardinals back in when Yadi was in his heyday, and basically you knew the running game was not accessible to you, that you just weren't going to run because he was that good. I absolutely think he's a Hall of Famer, especially now that he's passing some of these round numbers offensively. You know, he's not a superstar player offensively, but he's been a good player offensively. He's actually gotten better during his career. And there's no question he has been absolutely a shutdown catcher in the way that Deion Sanders was a shutdown corner in the NFL.
Last one for today. Frank at Centigrade 2 writes in, I loved hearing Jess Mendoza talk about baseball on the podcast. Busters, is there a particular song that when you hear, you immediately associate with baseball or a moment covering baseball?
Yeah, Center Field by John Fogerty. When I first started covering baseball, the Nashville Sounds back in 1989-90, they would run out to the field to that. What a perfect baseball song. And it just feels like when you hear that song, it's on a sunny day, everybody's happy. You know, the type of days we're looking forward to, Taylor, in 2021 that we didn't have enough of in 2020.
Tell me about it, man. We're getting close. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And don't subscribe. Follow us. That is the new verbiage from Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So do follow the podcast if you have yet to already. Thanks, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jeff, Sarah, Steve, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.